You're listening to Blue Yonder with your hosts, Jim Jones, and introducing Aaron Hubbard. Everybody, welcome to episode 75 of Blue Yonder. I am your host, Aaron Hubbard, and this is
Mad Brew from Mad Brew Labs.
And we are going to be doing a Gen Con review week. My buddy Jim is under the weather, and as is his wont, I think if you've been following us for the entire 18-month history of Blue Yonder, you're aware that each and every one of the conventions that Jim Jones attends, he gets the crud. Starting with, I think he got SARS at the first, no, swine flu at the first Penny Arcade Expo, and then he followed that up with a vicious infection that he got from PAX East. He followed up with another vicious infection he got from PAX East, and now Gen Con, he's once again developed some kind of respiratory. He's like a baby bird. He needs to be fed antibiotics through a dropper.
So he's got corn crud.
Corn crud? What is corn crud?
It's Gen Con, Midwest.
Yeah, I don't know. So, tonight we're going to be talking about our experiences at Gen Con, give everybody a little review of what went down, what was new and notable, and what some of the cool games we played, and some cool stuff we saw, and yeah, that's what you got to look forward to. What you missed, shame on you. So, just open it up, start with you. You want to start the conversation?
Sure. I guess I could start off. I got a press release today from Gen Con saying that they, once again, busted the attendance records, their own attendance records.
Right.
And they had, let me see here, let me look at my notes, 119,707 people turnstile and 36,733 unique visitors over 96 hours.
You know, that blows my mind, because we talked about this a little bit today. I feel like Gen Con, it should be so much larger than PAX. But when you look at the statistics, it's a basically only 50% larger. And I base that on just my impressions of how large a crowd it is, and also the physical space that Gen Con takes up has got to be four times the size of PAX in its entirety. So they've only got 50% more people spread out over four times the space. This just doesn't add up. I can't figure out why there's not more. Doesn't seem like there's more people there.
Maybe Penny Arcade's lying on their numbers.
It could be.
Yeah,
could
I don't. I don't know. I don't see how people lie. Why? What kind of purpose that would serve?
I do.
I know this year things definitely did not seem as crowded because they expanded in the new areas of the expansion for the Indiana Convention Center.
Right.
So things were definitely not as clumped together. There was more elbow room, especially in the exhibit hall.
How big? I would say the exhibit hall was at least twice as big, maybe three times as big.
I think it was about twice as big. Really? If you look at the map, you can see like...
Because it's L-shaped, right?
It's kind of like trapezoidal or something.
Yeah, the board game and minis and CCG was all thrown together into one L-shaped space. And I think that's what I was thinking of, that space was about three times larger than the old expo hall.
Right. Yeah, I never went. Unfortunately, I never went to that space the entire Gen Con.
Dude, I was sad because some of my previous Gen Con highlights have been walking through the mini rooms. And they've got these elaborate sets set up. Well, now, instead of each like miniature game having its own room or several rooms that you can, I guess, lock up at night or whatever, or someone can stay in, now everything is out on like basically tables that are no wider than the one that we're podcasting on. So the giant Grand Canyon sets that were like 30 foot wide by 30 foot wide, with guys moving them with giant telescoping arms and stuff, those I did not see those anywhere.
Really? That is disappointing.
So they did have some cool stuff, but it's kind of like everything felt kind of on the scale of what you would see on a Saturday afternoon at a local hobby store. You know, like, you know, there's some mech warrior battles, but they're all basically an 8 foot map by 4 foot map, and you know, they had little foam hexagon shaped mountains and stuff like that.
Right.
So I was kind of disappointed in that it was much bigger, but it wasn't as jaw-dropping. Not that I ever play minis or anything like that anyway.
I was going to say, most of the minis terrain that I find that's pretty good are usually at the exhibit hall with their perspective exhibitors. You know, Privateer Press, they usually have some fantastic stuff going on. But yeah, I didn't see a lot of that this year either.
Well, yeah, this year the Privateer Press demos were like the size of pizza boxes.
Really?
It's like, here's your Warcaster and your three machines, and here's my Warcaster and three machines, and here's 30 minutes to explain the rules. And
it's odd because it almost seemed like the Privateer Press booth was larger than it has been.
I just know that because every one of their demos were stand-up affairs, like, you know, little cafeteria-style tables. And I need to postpone these updates or they're going to wreak havoc on our podcast. So, yeah, I don't know. But the expo hall itself was pretty cool. So you got a press badge this year, right?
Yes, I did.
Were you able to take advantage in any way of the press? Like, because, like, our frenemies over at Personal Arrogance talk about the Penny Arcade press badge and how they basically get, they call it the cheater hour, where... You get in at the expo hall an hour before the public gets to every day, and you can get, like, you know, right to the front of the line, and you get everybody fawning over you. Was that your experience at Gen Con?
No, Gen Con doesn't quite, I guess they don't have quite the, they don't cater quite to the press as much as PAX does. However, I mean, there is a cheater hour, but it's only the first day.
Oh, really?
So, Thursday morning, you get it in an hour before everybody else, along with Gen Con also has these packages called Very Important Gamers, VIG packages. So people with VIG badges.
The badge?
Badge.
Oh, VIG, I guess, would be.
Yeah, the VIG badges, and maybe their companions. Like, they can buy stuff, like, make them VIG companions. I guess like a Fellowship of the Badge. and press badges get in an hour early on Thursday morning.
That's not much time.
No, it's not much time because there's a lot. I mean, I ended up, because I already knew the place I was going to go to look at stuff, having made a big interactive map of the entire exhibit hall before I knew I was there.
Right.
So I knew where I was going. But as a press member, you cannot make any purchases in that hour. So you have to wait until the exhibit hall actually opens to make purchases. Because I guess you're supposed to be doing Presley stuff. You know, doing interviews, making comments, taking pictures, whatever.
But an hour's not enough time. I thought that, like, the whole Wednesday they had the expo hall open for...
Wednesday is called Trade Day, and that you can get a press... Your press badge allows you to get into that, which is like $100 extra on top of everything else. But it's mostly seminars.
Really?
So, like, from my understanding, well, actually, from my understanding and observations on Thursday morning, not all the exhibits are even set up, because there are people still setting up.
Really?
As I was trying to talk with people about games. So.
Yeah, they don't cater to press for shit, because you, there's no way one man could see a third of everything in the expo hall in an
hour. Yeah, I think it would be a good idea to get in an hour early every day. That'd be nice.
I mean, or maybe an hour after the expo hall closes, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, well, remember we were playing that, we were demoing the Game of Thrones battles of...
Westeros.
And the designer there said that they've been kicking them out early, like earlier than usual.
Right. Well, he said that they'd never really cared.
Right, yeah, I imagine a bunch of the exhibitors get together and demo each other's crap the whole evening. That's the way I'd do it. That's the way I'd roll if I was in there.
Right.
But yeah, from judging from what he was saying, you know, they've been pretty strict about getting them out right after the hall closes.
Right.
I don't know if that has something to do with maybe the expansion and maybe the convention center itself, something that's going on there or what.
Do you remember, like, I don't ever remember the years past where they were, like, announcing, like, you know, Gen Con people, you've got 15.
Yes, no, they've done that every
year. Okay, because I've never really hung out. I hung out in the expo hall a lot more this year than I have before, because my goal was I wanted to play test and demo as much stuff as possible.
Yes, no, they do the announcements saying, you know, you've only got 10 minutes or whatever, and then the expo hall is closed.
Right.
Yeah, they've done that in years past.
Right. So, I say I didn't make it there. I thought I was going to attend all 4 days, but I decided at the last minute stuff was so busy at work, and I was kind of just in a funk that I wasn't going to take any days off and bank them for when I was in a better mood. But Thursday, Jim and I headed into downtown, and we got our badges, which by 7 o'clock on Thursday night, there was nobody in line for badges. So we just got in. You are lucky,
because 12 hours earlier, the badge registration is actually in the, if you're looking at it from the south,
mm-hmm.
from Maryland Street,
mm-hmm.
so your back is to the Capitol,
mm-hmm.
And it's in that northwest, so it's on the left side of the convention hall. It's kind of located, the registration stuff is all located in the northeast corner. Well, it went from the registration area through all the, you know, how they clump up the line, you know, they double back the lines.
Right.
With the stanchions and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. It went all the way from Capitol Street out the doors on the other side to West Street and doubled
mm-hmm.
back.
Mm-hmm.
It was insane because I got there and I was like, wow, look at this line. You know? Uh-huh. Thank goodness I didn't have to stand there because all I had to do was go to the press room and
right.
present my idea. I was third in line.
Huh.
So...
Yeah, I've been there. The very first, I've learned a lot about Gen Con in the 4 years I've attended. And the first year I went like, you know, at right around opening or midday on Thursday, and I waited about an hour and 20 minutes to get my badge, and then I went to the event registration and waited another hour to get all my event tickets and stuff. So I will say that I looked over at the event registration, and it was like wrapped back and forth, even on Thursday night.
Yeah, no, you, I mean, if you are planning on attending Gen Con, you really need to do pre-registration.
Yes.
You get your badge mailed to you.
That's the way to go.
You get your, along with your tickets.
Mm-hmm.
There's
and
no...
you get a discount.
Yes, you get a $10 discount off your badge.
Right. And then a lot of the things, you know, again, hindsight, a lot of the special events, they sell out quite a bit in advance of Gen Con.
Yeah, you have to be, when event registration opens up, you need to be there, and whoever you're gaming with, if uh-huh. you plan on gaming together,
right,
need to be grabbing your stuff at the same time. Now, there is an advantage. You can buy up to 2 event tickets
mm-hmm.
for yourself.
Right.
So that means for whatever you're doing, you can buy you and up to 1 other guy
mm-hmm.
Tickets for 1 other person.
Right.
So that, you know, if you have a group of 4 and then 2 of you can actually be there when that registration opens up, you can cover everybody. So yeah, like stuff like True Dungeon
right.
is gone in minutes.
There were still True Dungeons to be found.
There's True Dungeons to be found, but mostly it's when you get there on site.
Right.
And you have to have generics.
Yeah.
And can't guarantee you're going to be in the same group.
Right. Which sucks. We talked about True Dungeon enough. I want to, so Thursday, after we got our badges, I've never seen them be out of programs ever before.
They're out of programs.
They're out of programs, which is a Gen Con must. If you're like, you know, you don't have a program, you don't know what the hell is going on. Whereas if you do, you've got roughly 190 pages of stuff to do all the time. So I was like, that was kind of because our plan was to go over to the Ram Brewery and to kind of pour through and find out things we want to do. So we came up with a new plan, which is still go over to Ram's Brewery and just drink.
Did you not collect your bag?
Yeah, I got our bag. We got our bag.
They didn't have the program guide in the bag?
No, they ran out.
Really?
They ran out. That's the only day I saw them run out. The other days, like even at the end of the day, there was still, you can find a kiosk that had, and those,
yeah, they have stacks,
those things
on.
Have to cost like $5 to print out.
They're a lot, yeah.
But, of course, they do have a lot of, there's like freaking advertisements all over it.
What's funny is that you could have got a digital version of the program.
Really?
Guide. Yeah.
I wonder if I'd like that better. Because just
text,
an aside,
full text search, man.
Just as an aside, I've got a Kindle, and I've been basically buying all my books in digital format of late. And I thought it's the coolest thing since sliced bread, and it is. Until last week, I was going through a book that I've read before, and I'm trying to find a particular passage. And normally, I know approximately where in the book it's at, and I'm kind of scanning for keywords, and I would just go through and thumb through rapidly until I found the page. It's hard as hell to do that in the Kindle, because it takes like a quarter of a second to do each page, and
really?
A full text search takes forever. And also, it's like if I wanted to find where, you know, Harry, like I was reading the Dresden Files, the one thing we're finding where Harry got an eyebrow burnt off. if you search for eyebrow, you'll come across dozens of hits. If you search across for burn, if you search for eyebrow burnt, you're not going to get anything.
Right.
It's like a really primitive version of search.
Contiguous, right.
Yeah. They need like Google type context searching on the Kindles before you can just do that kind of.
I bet, you probably know this too, the digital copy of the Gen Con program would not work on a Kindle very well.
Really?
Yeah, I imagine it's all laid out with tables, and you have tons of images and background images.
Or if you had an iPad, though.
Look like shit. Now, on the iPad, that would be different. iPad would probably render just fine.
You know what's funny about that is that that's the one difference in Gen Con and PAX is Gen Con, I saw a handful of handheld gaming devices and a couple iPads, and you know everybody's got smartphones, but hardly any laptops. PAX, every other person has got an iPad or a netbook, or everyone's got DSs and all that kind of stuff. There's not a lot of video game going on. There was a classic arcade here at the Gen Con, and there was like a very small kind of like, you know, beat up looking console area that had like all the different generation consoles and some emulators and stuff to be had. But this is, you know, for the first time also, I thought that there wasn't a lot of hardly any video games at all in the expo floor.
Because usually Turbine's showing, Blizzard's there with the Warcraft stuff. But yeah, there's none of that. The only video game I actually saw
Blizzard had some kiosks over in the CCG area.
Did they?
Right. You know, for their...
Well, I know Cryptologic.
Right.
Yeah, I think that I'm pronouncing
it. I thought it was Cryptozoic.
Yeah, Cryptozoic.
Yeah, Cryptozoic.
Who has a license for the World of Warcraft trading card game.
Right.
They had a fairly large presence there, but since I don't do...
Any of that crap, right.
Card games, yeah, I didn't see any Blizzard stuff. I mean, nothing was in the exhibit hall.
Now, we talked about the RAM, and the RAM had the completely redone menu, and they had a little bit of decoration, mostly in the form of, like, vendor banners.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see any cosplaying going on by the staff. They were showing, when I was there, the Lord of the Rings movies on, like, different loops and stuff, which is kind of entertaining. And then they showed the Transformers 2, which was actually, like, turned into a bar-wide MST3K. You know, I'd never seen that. Did you know that movie has, the Constructicons, when they turned into the Constructicon giant monster, it had giant balls, like giant testicles, like wrecking balls were spun together between his legs like giant steel balls.
No way.
That's what I said for a good 5 minutes. No way. No way. No way is this happening.
Speaking of, you know, restaurants, the RAM used to be the number one destination for, like, anything beyond fast food at Gen Con. They used to be open, like, almost 24 hours.
Right.
They used to do more decorations. Yeah, I mean, the manager, but why would happen? There was a change of management.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not been the case. However, Scotty's Brewhouse, which is another block or two away, I believe has usurped the throne for the number one gamers destination. Indie Dave, he's known as Indie Dave on the Gen Con forums, and I believe in Twitter, it's, you know, Indie Dave. Just search for Indie Dave, Scotty's Brewhouse Twitter. You'll find his account there. Well, Dave has done a real... He's the general manager of the downtown Scotty's.
Right.
So he's not Scotty, who's busy doing other things. Right. But I believe that Dave is probably the guy who's instrumental in bringing, catering to Gen Con for the downtown location. They do a different colored dice every day. You can collect all four this year. Mm-hmm. If you collected all four, they go fast.
Right.
If you collected all four, you could get a free card stock digital thing from Fat Dragon Games, which was doubles as a dice tower and GM screen.
That's cool.
I think it's called the Ultimate DM screen or something from Fat Dragon Games. They get the 501st.
Which is the Stormtrooper. I mean, I got my picture taken with a very good Darth Vader. There was a Tusken Raider there, several Stormtroopers. All of their staff, that I could tell, were cosplaying of some sort, or at least wearing a Batman shirt or you know, something. Which I think is kind of funny. Did they actually have a staff meeting? It's like, you have to dress up like a nerd all weekend long.
Right.
You know, it's like
or a slut.
That's their pieces of flair. Oh yeah, I saw a Robin that was pretty hot.
Yeah.
So,
and they have events there from before Gen Con, starting at the very beginning of the week. They have mm-hmm. events there about gaming events.
Wow, you can do I didn't
Castles
know that.
And Crusades.
Wow.
Which is a retro clone of like first edition D&D mm-hmm. that's been revamped underneath, mm-hmm. you know, like the new OGL license and stuff like that and re-released. They had R.A. Salvatore there.
Who, no way.
Yes, doing signings on
wow.
Saturday. He was there from 8 to 10 doing signings. And, of course, R.A. Salvatore, or I hear some people pronounce his name Salvatore. He wrote the Dritz d'Urden long line of Forgotten Realms novels. And he's done his own things like the Demon Sword or Demon Stone or something.
What's his
like
main character? The guy who's got the tiger. The
Dritz d'Urden.
Okay.
It's a panther.
Panther.
Because he had Windhwivar.
They had a pretty badass
statue
of him prowling the second floor. Yep. Yeah,
that's from the RPGA.
And they had a really sweet beholder in the
yeah, that's
D&D
been there
room.
Before.
Really?
And the troll, like on the very first level near the...
I've never seen it before.
Southern
right?
thing. That's also... Yeah, both of those made their debuts a couple years ago.
Huh.
So the Dritz statue's new.
Right.
And then they also, last year, they debuted a... Because D&D came out with a beginner's box.
Mm-hmm.
The red box. It was like reminiscent of the
right.
old box set, the red box set. And they had a 3D dragon display. And then I believe they actually put that at the airport this year. So
huh.
people coming in from
flights
would see, you know...
Sweet,
yeah.
sweet. So what'd you do Thursday night other than... You know, like I said, I basically went to the RAM, and then I did have an experience after that. I came back and found the open gaming tables where they have a whole kind of like pavilion dedicated just open gaming. Got my box of Bang and started playing with my group, and we ended up swapping, rotating in three people from the crowd that gathered to watch us play Bang, and that was a good time.
Well, Thursday it was a lot of walking through Zib Hall for me because I got there first out of all my group
mm-hmm.
because of the press badge.
Right.
Then I went through there with the press badge, and then as people trickled in, we'd take another trip through the exhibit hall, and then as another trip through the exhibit hall.
Right.
And then we ended up, I think we capped off the night at Scotty's,
mm-hmm.
and then we went back to my house, which, you know, is in Franklin, so it's only about a 35, 40-minute drive from downtown.
Mm-hmm.
And then Friday night, or Friday... Oh, wait a second. Let me talk about the White Wolf fiasco.
Yeah.
So Thursday.
Because that was like a highlight you were talking about in
yeah,
the
Yeah, always. They do the Succubus Club, right?
Uh-huh.
So we swing by the White Wolf booth, and I won't name any names, but the guy who was running the booth was talking with a fan, and talking with a fan, and talking with the same fan for like, I know shit, 20 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Finally, he pays attention to me because one of the models, one of the Tim Bradstreet models, whom they were signing, she was signing posters. She's in it. It's
mm-hmm.
for the new 20th anniversary Vampire the Masquerade book that's coming out. Anyways,
right.
you know, she finally nudged him and was like, hey, you know, there's like three guys here waiting to talk to you. And so we were talking to him about the Succubus Club, which is usually a Saturday night affair, open bar. It's DJ'd the whole nine yards. Well, I have a funny feeling that White Wolf has kind of become more of a write-off for CCP, which are the people who own EVE Online MMO. They bought out White Wolf, and they're making a World of Darkness MMO.
Mm-hmm.
So their booth was really small. Last year, they had a bar there.
And the booth?
Yeah, it was a bar.
That served alcohol.
Served alcohol.
In the expo hall.
Yes.
Wow.
This year's like... Well, it was probably about the size of this table on one side, and then, you know, about 10 feet deep.
Wow! So they got the standard exhibitor booth.
Yeah, the standard,
the smallest you can
yes,
get.
The smallest you can get. They had
damn.
It,
damn,
and they were sharing an end cap with Drive-Thru RPG.
Oh my god!
So, you know, so he hands us these tickets, these little blue tickets. They're like, okay, and he explains it to me. We're doing it different this year.
Uh huh.
This year we're doing it once. We're doing this thing every night. That sounded intriguing. I was like, oh, every fucking night?
Mm-hmm.
Wow, these guys are getting down.
Right.
We're not renting any place like the dance clubs they used to.
Right.
It's going to be in their presidential suite hotel room.
Okay.
And it's just going to be very few, very, very few. Like before, you'd have hundreds of people.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
But now we're talking like less than 50.
Right.
So we got our passes, and it happened to be at the Omni Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
So that night, after capping things off at Scotty's on Thursday night, we swing by the Omni, and we go up there, and we're like, you know, what floor? We go to the desk. What floor is the presidential suite on? Well, we have multiple suites, sir. I need a name so we can call ahead.
Uh-huh.
And...
Did you try to be like,
no, well, what
wolf?
I said, well, no, what I said was, well, we got, you know, I showed him the pass.
Uh-huh.
And immediately they went into defensive mode.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I was like, you know, this is the one we want to go to. I don't know what name you're going to call up.
Right.
I don't know whose it's registered in. I mean, I could have, you know, dropped some White Wolf people that were there's names, but mm-hmm. there's no guarantee that that's who is in the presidential suite. So they immediately went into defensive mode, and they're like, well, we need a name, and there are no parties allowed here.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it's not a party. She's like, well, the ticket explicitly states there's a party. And I was like, well, you explicitly read wrong.
Uh-huh.
Because it says, come have a drink with us.
Right.
You know, this is a VIP ticket to the White Wolf. It says, you know, White Wolf something or other. But at no point does it say party, ever.
Right.
Explicitly. Never.
Right.
I guess you can...
Although that's what it is.
Infer. That's what it
yeah,
is.
Right.
You can infer that there's going to be a party if you're asking people to come up and have
right.
a drink with you, right?
Right.
Well, whatever. So it's a gathering of friends.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's
this
not against
woman
the Constitution.
Tried to yank it out of my fucking hand.
Really?
She's like, let me see it, sir. And I was like, no. Because at this point, I was like, okay, these people are getting upset.
Uh-huh.
Because she told me this is not the first time we've seen it.
Really?
You know, and I'm like, okay, so I don't feel like contributing to getting anybody pissed off. You know, getting anybody in trouble. So
their experiment failed.
Yeah. So I don't know how many people actually made it up the presidential suite. I was almost to the point where, fuck it, I'll just take the elevator up. It's got to be in the upper floors.
Right.
In the corner somewhere, and mm-hmm. I'll just find out where, I'll just listen,
mm-hmm.
see where shit's happening. And I was like, fuck it, it's not even worth it. Mm-hmm. I don't feel like getting in trouble, whatever. And so I didn't even revisit
mm-hmm.
the White Wolf booth.
Ever I was going to say, I wonder if you asked him, like, what was up.
No, I didn't care.
Yeah.
I mean, if I wanted to find out, I guess I could... Because you know, I kind of have online contacts with White Wolf that I would feel comfortable talking with that about. But frankly, I just got so put off. I said, fuck it. But yeah. Ugh. And that kind of, you know what? That kind of set the stage. Like, this Gen Con was not my favorite Gen Con.
Really?
Well, one, I didn't pre-register for any events.
Right.
So most
so you were walking around
was,
like the Connor of the Damned.
Yeah. And we did try to get in a couple events. Me and my buddies are big Pathfinder fans. And they were running...
Which Pathfinder, if you don't know, is kind of like D&D 3.75.
Right. It's the latest edition, or it's the latest iterative of the third edition of the world's oldest role-playing game.
Uh-huh.
So, so yeah, it's like when Wizards went 4E, went with 4th edition, kind of yep. fucked up the
Paizo's like,
licensing.
Fuck that, right.
And Paizo used to do Dragon Magazine and Dungeon, the
right.
print versions.
Mm-hmm.
But Dragon had this whole digital initiative and kind of, they didn't yank it out from underneath them, but there's kind of no forewarning that, hey, you won't be able to renew your license with this.
Right.
So I kind of get the feeling that Paizo said, well, fuck you guys, we're going to do our own thing, and hence Pathfinder was born. But we're big fans of that, and they were running a module we were wanting to play called We Be Goblins. All the player characters are goblins.
Huh.
So it was really fun, like a tongue-in-cheek type thing, and we tried to get in on it with generics. But I tell you what, the Pathfinder Society room was just blowing up. The lines formed like 55 minutes before the next
Damn.
Slots opened. By 5 after, I was 20 people back in the fucking line.
Wow.
So this is 55 minutes before the next thing started. Mm-hmm. They had, I believe their room size had doubled from last year, so Paizo and Pathfinder Society is really growing. It's a good thing. I mm-hmm. like seeing that. You know, and they're partnering with more people, so, you know, Wizards, there's no more D&D miniatures, but there's Pathfinder minis on the horizon.
Right. Which we talked about that a little bit. That's bullshit.
Yeah.
$4 for a single random miniature.
Yes.
That's a tough, tough
for a single medium-based. So medium size.
Okay,
which
you might get
size,
too small.
You might get two halflings or something. I don't know what the fuck.
Right.
Or
$6.
$6 for a random large.
Right.
Which is fucking expensive.
I don't know about that model. Again, you know.
Right. My model would be to release non-random hordes.
Right.
Like, so you have a package of 20 to 40 miniatures, non-random. You see what you're getting. They're built specifically, like they do, Pathfinder, Paizo's bread and butter is the Adventure Path, which is basically six books that comprises a whole campaign. Mm-hmm. So it takes characters from low level to epic level, you know, that's it. So, you know, you release box sets of minis based on these campaign setting type things. I think that would be golden.
Right.
But obviously, they're in partnership with WizKids. WizKids bread and butter is random collector-itis fucking...
Hero clicks.
...stuff.
But even they do, like, you know, for $10, you get three random minis.
Yeah, well, if you see the pictures, these are different quality than...
They're higher quality?
I would say so.
Okay.
I think they don't meet my taste for miniatures, fantasy miniatures. The paint schemes and the sculpture style kind of seems to be a little bit on the anime side for me.
Well, plus, when you're talking about fantasy, you're talking about, like, metal, you know, assembled, painstakingly hand-painted. I mean, no mass-produced plastic models ever going to be.
No, but, you know, when I say style, I like the D&D style of mini, the D&D miniature style.
Gotcha.
So, it was, you know, staple fantasy stuff, not very stylized. Of course, Paizo also has an agreement with Reaper miniatures for the full metal paint your own type shit, which are excellent, and they're priced about the same, but you see what you're getting.
Right.
And it's
well,
metal,
they said, back when I used to be into minis, I heard that the philosophy was you could have good, non-random, cheap, pick two. So if you wanted good and cheap, you had to go random. And if you wanted, you know, I guess...
Well, yeah, I mean, they do a good job explaining, because here's the thing, so... You can't, if you go non-random, but you still want to fill all the niches, right? So you get your halfling clerics or something. Then if you do them single packs, now here's the thing, it's all behind the concept of single packs. Mm-hmm. So those single packs of halfling clerics, there's only going to be one bought. And so you're going to have a shit ton of stock that's never sold.
Sure.
Which is why I say you go with the box set. Mm-hmm. The box set of 20 to 40.
Right.
Boom. You put in all the niche race class combinations and all the rare shit that you wouldn't see, but you also put in all the stuff that people really want.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, I would kill for a goblinoid army box set, you know, where I get like 20 goblins and 10 hobgoblins and a bunch of orcs or something, you know.
Do you think they'll ever get to where, you know, the kind of manufacture on demand or almost print, three-dimensional print? So, like, you go on a Paizo website and say, I want this particular character, and it'll actually manufacture, ship it, and send it to you?
I think,
is that the salvation for miniatures?
I think that's, because I did a lot of research on kind of, 3D printing
stuff. The state of the 3D printing, right.
A few years ago. And there's a nice website called Shapeways where you can send in your own stuff. Like, if you're a 3D modeler or if you have access to 3D scanning, so you'd be like, wow, I love that mini. So right. I'll scan that fucker and then have it printed. I mean, I'm sure that infringes on...
Multiple copyrights, but...
But anyway, so I would say, and therefore a while, you could get 3D... printed versions of your World of Warcraft character. Right. So I remember stuff came out like that. I believe that it's not here yet, but within the next 5 or so years, we're going to see where that stuff is going to be cheap and readily available. So, and there's probably be a lot of people doing their own stuff, like businesses.
Right.
Doing that kind of stuff.
I got to say that, like, I always come in with, like, three goals for any con that I go to, and I've had... this one goal has been unfulfilled for 4 fucking years now, and that is to play a Call of Cthulhu game.
Why do you have to wait for a con to do that?
Well, because I don't know anyone who has the source books and knows how to GM and all that kind of stuff, and they've got multiple. And I got there, and every single one of them started at 11 a.m. or before. And if you know... how Aaron rolls, especially on cons where I'm up till... I didn't go to bed before 3 o'clock every morning, basically. Because I was either out drinking or we came home and we watched some goofy money, drank and watched goofy movies here. But it's really rough. The only time, like last year, I had to make 2 8 o'clock appointments to make the stupid Axis and Allies tournament, and that almost killed me. In fact, I showed up 30 minutes late to one, and thank God my partner showed up on time because we'd have been disqualified. But holy shit. That was kind of rough to hit that bell for a game that I've never played before. So I'm going on my 5th Gen Con next year, and I have yet to play Call of Cthulhu. Or Cthulhu, or whatever you pronounce
Cthulhu.
It.
Cthulhu. Yeah, you know what's funny is that this was the first year I saw Chaosium there, too, in a long time.
Oh, yeah?
Which are the...
Printers.
The publishers. Of Call of Cthulhu RPG. Dude, there's tons of role players around here. You don't, I guess. Don't know them.
I don't know them.
I've never ran a Call of Cthulhu game, but I've played them.
Right. Because that's the only one that's like got a really unique flavor, mechanics, and everything. I've been wanting to try that. The other two goals.
Well, yeah,
I
mean, there's no. It's kind of bleak. It's got a bleak outlook.
Yes,
you're going to go insane and die. Probably.
Yeah, and it's funny because PAX I played earlier this year. I played the first time.
Arkham Horror?
Not the Mansions of Madness. Yeah, Arkham Horror from Fantasy Flight. And it's got the similar... The board's probably going to beat your ass.
Mm-hmm.
We ended up winning by the skin of our teeth. And that was, like, you know, a cool moment. Because we had played... We played with 6 people, and, like, only 2 of them played. And there's 4, like, virgins. And the fact that we beat the board is pretty cool. But I had 2 other goals. And none of them happened this year. I wanted to get a foam shield for my boy. Because there's a couple of booths that make these, like... Very real looking foam weapons and armor and epic armory, right?
Yeah.
And I've gotten Jack tons. Like, he's got a Nerf axe and a Nerf sword and a Nerf katana, and we tear the shit out of him.
Mm-hmm.
When Jack was 2, I bought him basically a dagger, but like with the Hobbit principle of you give a Hobbit a dagger, it looks like a sword. And it still looks as good new as the day I bought it 3 years ago. And then last year I got him a long sword. That he's graduated to, and again, this is a kid beats the stuff on concrete, and the skin still looks nice, and it's all shiny, and it looks perfect. And so this year, I was going to get him a shield, because last year I went, they had really cool kind of round bucklers, maybe 14 inches diameter with some straps, and had like cool dragon patterns on them, and like little, you know, molded rivets, and it looked like it was a very cool. And they were about $60. I'm like, I'm going to get him one of those, and I want to get myself a pipe, because they had... Last year, same place, had a couple of really nice functional pipes that looked like the Aragorn Ranger pipe, or there was one Gandalf pipe that was built like the staff, like he had.
Right.
And lots of like really cool, and they had
removable mouthpieces.
It'd be
nice if you could blow smoke.
A smoke ship.
Smoke ships.
Yeah, smoke man of war. but I went up and I'm like, okay, they had shields, but they were all like $130 and they weighed like 20 pounds and they had giant, I mean, they were
they had the $160 one.
Yeah, but it looked like shit, man.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't detailed at all.
I believe we're talking about medieval collectibles.
Right.
They are the U.S. importer for Epic Armor,
which is made
in Denmark.
Right.
And they're local to Indiana.
I just found, so that was the silver lining. Because I said, are these the only shields you've got? And she was like, yeah. And I'm like, what about the pipes? You don't have pipes. She's like, well, pipes weren't a big seller last year. So
they
brought
the pistols.
Yeah, they brought like the Pirate of the Caribbean style fake pistols, which were cool.
Yeah, they were cool. They also had a 6-shooter.
Yeah.
And a 3-gun
and a prop replica Johnny Depp. Walking around the booth when we were there.
Yeah.
I mean, this guy was cosplaying as Captain Jack Sparrow, and
he was doing a damn good job. He was all wobbly, and...
He had all the makeup, and he looked, you know, convincingly like him.
Fidgeted with everything, it was a good cosplay.
But I was really disappointed that I struck out on all 3 of my deals. But I did get to play a lot of games. I'll talk about the ones we played together. First up was the Lego...
Heroica, mm-hmm.
which I think it'd be fun for kids, but as an adult, was not that great.
It's kind of, it's limited for adults, I'd say. There's not much going on. It's all very, like, whatever you roll is kind of it.
Yeah.
Unless you're next to a monster, then you roll.
It's kind of like Chutes and Ladders with combat.
So you get maybe 2 rolls, that's it. Yeah.
It's Chutes and Ladders with combat.
But I think it'd be very cool for kids and the... what, maybe 6 to 10-year-old range.
Yeah, because they have several different sets.
And you can build them all on top of each other.
And they have, like, you know, because they got this, like, kind of... And the other thing that was pretty sweet is they have micro minis. So it looks like a Lego mini shrunk down to a quarter of its size.
Right,
and
it fits on just one little...
It fits on, like, one of the little blisters.
Yeah, what
you
do
know?
You call those things?
So it's like, I guess it's the size of a Lego minifig's leg,
mm-hmm.
only with a head on top of it. Right. There's no arms, but they all looked like, you know, there was a thief and a barbarian and a wizard.
I think
it's going to be fun to play with my boy, but I was hoping that it would actually be fun on its own.
I would like to see maybe some homebrew rules for it. You know what I mean?
Well, you can make some homebrew levels. I mean, because it's super easy to make.
Yeah, and since they all build on top of each other, I think it'd be cool,
right?
For kids.
The other thing we played together was there was a ton of Game of Thrones shit there at the convention.
Fantasy Flight
owns basically the whole license. Apparently, mm-hmm. They had a card game, a board game. And what we played, which was Battles of Westeros.
Like a miniature battles game.
And it was really cool. This was, and it was actually demoed by the guy who designed it, which was Rob Kuba, I guess is his name.
Yes.
And I found that out halfway through the stuff, because it's not like he was bragging or anything.
Well, that's one of the cool things about Gen Con, is that if you go there and you demo a game, the mm-hmm. chances of the designer of that game running the demo are fairly high.
Yeah. Yeah,
really high.
In fact, the only game I found that wasn't the case was, and Eric and Jesse from the Personal Arrogance crew will appreciate this, I played Blood Bowl League Manager, which is a CCG that they designed, and I'll talk about it a little bit later, but the designer couldn't be there because he was sick. But this is basically a two-player game, and it had a whole bunch of, it's got like, I don't know, 100 miniatures in it probably. And the game that we played, all the miniatures were fully painted.
Like, yeah, by a professional, it doesn't come painter. That way.
No. It all comes like they're molded one color. But having them, because I decided I'm going to get this game, when I finally get the game, it's going to be kind of a disappointment the first couple times I play, because not everything's all like painted by an expert paintist.
Yeah.
What'd you think of the game?
Well, I think we're both, because also Jim, he was playing on your side and I was playing with
some dude.
Yeah, some stranger.
Because it's they do have.
It's actually a two-player. Yeah, it's meant to be two players, but I think they have multiplayer rules.
There's an errata for it.
That's
going to
come out. Yeah, that, like a downloaded additional thing.
Right.
So I think at first it seemed kind of very simple, maybe too simple. Mm-hmm. But as we started playing, the tactics actually, because it's kind of a strategy. You have to know, like, because if you rout your enemy, you got to understand how it's going to route, and then place your, you know, make sure that you've placed your other armies appropriately so that instead of just escaping, they actually die.
Right.
And, you know, like the cards that lend the commander special powers, mm-hmm. I think that adds a lot to it.
Right.
So, like, I went up there with Gregor the Mountain
mm-hmm.
and almost obliterated one of your elite units.
Yeah. Which, that's the other cool, because each unit is colored green, blue, red, in order
and if
of
you're
toughness.
Colorblind, it can be rough.
I did realize that the shields, the different colored shields, had different patterns. So even if you're colorblind, you'd eventually learn the thing. But yeah, but I thought it was neat because they got 8-sided dice. You got a banner icon, which makes, if you roll those, it makes the enemy, you rout them, they retreat. You've got a purple castle looking symbol that's a wild.
No, it's not a castle. It's a mailed hand.
A gauntlet. Okay. Yeah. And that you can make that be anything you want. And then there's 3 greens, 2 blue, and 1 red symbol, I think. So what that means is basically the green units are wimps, because when you're rolling,
you have a higher percentage to roll a green, which means they lose a unit.
Exactly. And conversely, the red are tough, because only 1 out of 8 are you going to actually hit them.
Well, 2, because they're wild.
Oh, the wild, right.
And you also have your dice depend on your unit, too, how many dice you roll.
Right.
So you could roll 1 to 4.
There's 4 up to 4 dice.
1 to 4.
But I thought it was pretty fun, because you're right. There was a couple of novel things, like when it's played on a hexagonal grid. So when 2 melee units engage each other, they actually have an engagement icon that looks like a set of iron teeth that you lay on the grid between them. Mm-hmm. And what that means is now these units are locked in combat. So if any unit decides to retreat, the other gets a parting shot. So it's kind of like you know, an attack of opportunity. The other thing is any other unit that engages them gets to flank.
Right, because they don't really engage.
Right, which that means is when you roll a die, whatever the result is, you can pick one color to re-roll.
Right.
So, like, you know, if you're attacking a red unit and you rolled three green, you can say, I'm going to take these three green and re-roll them and hopefully get another red hit. And, again, the retreat rules, like, however, whichever side you're attacking on, if you route them, they try to retreat directly behind. Right.
There's a primary and a secondary route.
Right, and that's a lot of the skill is cutting off those avenues of retreat, so you're kind of like putting them into a pincher.
Right, and the terrain plays factor in that, so they can't retreat across river unless there's a ford there.
Right.
So when they do, they end up drowning,
right,
I guess.
You guys basically kicked our ass because your archers decimated
us. Oh, yeah. Well, we lined up some pretty good things there. Yeah. So, yeah, your foot soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
Well, in the upper right-hand corner, we basically had foot troops.
Because we were...
You had your cavalry came down there and pretty much...
Yeah,
was whooping ass down there.
And it's too bad because I found out the Hound, because we were playing the Starks. So we had some mounted cavalry. We had I think we had one archer unit, but we had these Houndsmen, which I didn't know what they did. But if they don't move for a full turn,
Kennel Masters, you can
unleash them for like a range of four ranged attack, which is the flavor is basically the guys are working the dogs up into a frenzy, and then they let slip the dogs of war.
Oh, really? That's
and
awesome.
And the dogs go out and like maul the troops.
Well, that,
and
we only had
back.
Four rounds of combat
right.
before the convention hall closed,
right,
so that
kind
of sucked.
Right.
But yeah, and I was playing the Lannisters.
You were playing the Lannisters.
What
happens to those who lie with lions, don't you? They get strung up. But I actually want to buy this for nothing else, but there's very few awesome tactical two-player games that you can finish in like 90 minutes, so I think that's perfect for Gemini. But it's $80.
Was it 80?
$80.
Well, I thought it was like 60 or something.
No, it was $80.
Pretty pricey.
But it has like 120 miniatures,
well,
and it has
yeah.
10 different scenarios.
And it's all the scenarios are based, or most of the scenarios are based from actual events in the books.
Yes, they're supposedly is taken from a battle, and they go from like beginner all the way to like, you know, multiple armies on the map and all this kind of stuff.
So, and the scenarios determine like advantages and disadvantages.
Right.
So it's
and
all
difficulties.
Like it's all balanced based on the scenario.
Right. But I like it. I probably want to buy it. But the thing about Gen Con is there's all these first parties there. So there's very few, like if you wanted to buy a Fantasy Flight game, there's not a lot of booths of just generic
sellers.
Well,
that's because Fantasy Flight Games is there.
I know, and I wonder if that's part of the restrictions.
I don't know.
Because I saw some booths, you know, Rio Grande was a big booth member, and I saw a couple booths that were selling Rio Grande games at a pretty significant discount on some.
Yeah, I don't think they prevent other people from coming there.
But none of the first-party games
would be
discounted.
Mostly, if you're after RPG books or war game miniatures.
There's where you get the discounts.
And there's tons of retailers for that.
On the Sunday discount.
So, Sunday, it was like buy one, get five free at some places, man. But, I mean, to be honest, most of those books that they're selling is books that I'd never get anyways. I don't care how free it is.
Not at this point. Like, PAX, there's, like, a frenzy in the last hour where people are like, you got cash? Well, it's 20% off. And, you know, that's sort of where this... there weren't a lot of good deals. And
Con's not very much like that.
I'm thinking that what I really want to do is, if I can't get the Battles of Westeros before or, you know, at PAX for a discount, I'll probably order it online.
Mm-hmm.
But
I can see where you can get it for like $51 there.
Right. Where is it?
Boards and Bits.
Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I got Board Game Geeks open.
Yeah.
It's probably open. Did you know the other thing is you have to assemble the miniatures.
There's assembly?
Yeah, every one of them have to be put on their bases.
Oh, bases. That's not bad, though.
And I glue them. But
bases aren't bad.
$80 though? I heard it takes
$80 if you wanted them all assembled, you'd have to buy a fucking 4-foot long box.
Yeah, right. But I hear it takes like 2.5-3 hours just to put the game together.
Well, that's part of the fun, right?
Yeah, I think so.
So some to some
buyer beware though.
To some people,
Don't glue your fingers together. So that was the two that I played. Those I got a couple others. What?
Speaking of Fantasy Flight, while we're on the topic.
Oh yeah, you were right.
Yeah, I was right. Fantasy Flight Games did indeed get the license for tabletop games from for the Star Wars intellectual property. And at Gen Con, they had a very rough demo of the their first game, which is called X-Wing, miniatures battle game. So it's X-Wings versus TIE Fighters,
right,
just to begin with. I don't know how far they're going to expand that or what. If you're familiar with Fantasy Flight, used to distribute another game called Wings of War, World War II, World War I, fighter plane combats. It looked very similar to that.
Well, Battles of Westeros is a reskinned Battle War game. Did
yeah,
you know that?
That's what
and
the guy next
says
to
on,
was telling
actually
me.
Actually says on the fucking box, right. I noticed it's like a Battle Lore system.
So, yeah,
game.
Basically the designer, I think, just made up the scenarios and then, like, you know...
Refined the rules. He said that they asked him to make the, like, retreat rules less forgiving. And he's like, okay. All you know, right. It's like any time that I can screw over the player.
Right.
So, yeah, I was not that impressed. And I was... I don't know, I just...
I liked Wings of War.
Yeah, did you?
So I think I'll like this game.
Okay.
But it's basically... You decide, like, each craft has a certain type of actions it can take, and you decide on your actions you're going to take, and then before everybody does anything. And then from the player with the worst piloting skill on, you resolve your the things you selected. That's the basic gist of it. I'm sure that, you know, because they just announced that, like, the night before Gen Con. That they had that license.
Right.
So, and all the minis were very rough,
yeah,
fragile
they were all demo,
things.
Yeah.
They also previewed the Star Wars Living Card game.
Didn't see that.
I saw it, but I didn't demo it. I didn't watch it. So, but they do say that there's probably most likely going to be an RPG in the works, a tabletop role-playing game.
And has Fantasy Flight ever done an RPG?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they do the Warhammer Fantasy RPG.
Okay.
But
not the actual game itself. Not the actual miniatures. Someone else has a license for that, right?
For the...
Warhammer?
Yeah, well, Games Workshop.
Games Workshop, right.
Does the miniatures.
Why the hell wouldn't they just do their RPG?
Because they focus on the miniatures.
Huh? Okay.
So they license that off. They also, Fantasy Flight also does the Warhammer 40K RPGs, which is, it's actually three separate books. And you have, you start out with Rogue Trader, and then you have Dark Heresy, which is kind of like Cthulhu in space. And then you have Space Marine, or it's called, excuse me, it's called Death Watch. So it's Space Marines, but it's not like full-on battles, Space Marines. The
right.
story is you're part of the Death Watch, which is you're part of elite kill teams that
right.
work in small squads. So, yeah, no. So they do, they have a good, a fairly solid track record of doing RPGs as well.
Cool.
So, let me see, some of the other things.
I jumped in while you're thinking. I watched a round of the Game of Thrones card game being played and was not very impressed just because it seemed to be very hard to follow and I don't know, I just too complicated to me. Card games need to be a hell of a lot simpler than that.
I did
well, it's way harder than Magic.
Really?
Yeah, and it might be because everything was just foreign
new?
There was
yeah.
like all these new mechanics and all that. But I also watched people play the Game of Thrones
board game,
which is very Euro style, you know, resource management. I wasn't.
Well, it seems like that would kind of be. That's very. Seems to fit with Game of Thrones.
I'm
kind of
now that I've played all these Euro games, at first I was like on fire about how awesome it was. And now I'm like, okay, you play a lot of these Euro games and they all start. Once you played all the four or five archetypes, they all start playing similar.
Oh, yeah.
But then I also played. I want to touch about that. The Blood Bowl. League Manager Edition. That's cool because you get to decide how long the game lasts, because the conceit is you're playing, you're managing a team, and you put in the middle like a series of cards that flip over scenarios, and each one of those game, each one of those cards is a game that's being played in a Blood Bowl league that week. And
oh.
so like if you want a game, and each week takes about 10 to 15 minutes of real time to play. So if you want an hour long game, you make your season last four seasons or 4 weeks. So you have four scenarios to play. And then the final one's the Blood Bowl, which is worth more. you know, like Super Bowl. If you want to spend the whole 3-4 hours, you do a 16-game,
wow,
16-week season with the Blood Bowl culmination. But you can completely customize it. And you also can pick, like, if you want to have, you know, dwarves or humans or elves or I think they're not orcs. Maybe they are orcs. But there's, like, the orcs are a tackling cheating team. So, like, you have the players that would have little symbols on them, and there's, like, a little ball that, like, stole the ball from midfield and put it in there, and the ball's worth, like, 2 points. And then there's, a skull token, which is tackling, where you'd roll and you try to tackle a guy, and then you can re-tackle him to injure them and boot him out of the game. And then there's a cheat, which is a... I can't remember what that symbol is. Maybe that's the skull. And you get that, and you get a little... Yeah, it is. You get a little gold skull symbol to put on your card. When all the games are over, you flip those over, and they either add points to, take points away, or there's a whistle symbol that ejects the player. So, and every action, like taking the ball, passing the ball, tackling, is optional, except for cheating, which is always mandatory.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so it's like the players that cheat are going to cheat. And it was really fun. It was like... 4-player, but you could really you could expand that to where like 8 different players could play, because you basically all the games are laid out in front of you and you put players on one side or the other to say like, okay, I'm going to play this game, and then you go all the way around until all the games are filled up, and then you start, you know, it's like, okay, you lay out your linemen and then you get your running backs and your tacklers and all that stuff, and you know, by the time a round is over, the game's over and you win, you're competing for fans, which is how you win the game. Okay. You're competing for team upgrades, where you actually can draft, because you also have money that you can spend, and you can draft players from this star player deck. Mm. And then you also have coach upgrades, where like there is a illegal substitution, where I can choose to kill one of my own guys, who's like maybe he's on the ground or tackled already. I can choose to kill him, and then take him out of the game and replace him with anybody in my hand.
Oh.
And there's you know, several different others, like the, you know, if you tackle a guy, you can also steal the ball, or anyone that you tackled, you can also try to roll dice to injure. And it's very fun and fast-paced. If you like Blood Bowl, I would recommend it, because the game's like $20.
Oh.
And they sold out the first day at Gen Con. Really? They brought 500 copies. I think it was released at Gen Con. They sold out first day.
But they're excited about that.
Yeah, yeah. So, I also played, there's a lot of cool stuff. I got to meet the guys that make Mercs, who are local miniature game players. I didn't get a chance to play because I was really tired. I didn't want to stand in line for an hour to wait to play the system. The booth next to them, they had another fantasy or a football type game called Third and Long.
Right.
Where it's like, you know, basically deck building game that looked like, you know, you got offensive players and defensive players, and you kind of, you know, it's very the simulating Mercs, football.
The Mercs thing, I remember that. The movement for the miniatures was actually based on the card. So the card had actually divots that you put around the base. And then once you set it down on your base, you'd move it to the other end of the card,
mm-hmm.
which was pretty cool. I thought that was pretty, you know, instead of measuring shit.
That was very, there's a game called a constructible card game, they called it, called Pirates. Have you ever heard of it? Where you'd buy a booster pack for like $4 and it would come with 2 cardboard thick foam cards. And
I remember.
You'd punch out the ships and build them. And the stats card for the pirate ship, they would have a long side and a short side. And all your ranges for weapons and movement was, like, you'd get 2L1S, which means you can move 2 long sides and a short side of a card.
Ah.
So I thought that was really cool how they did all that.
Yeah. No, I've seen the pirate thing, but I've never played it.
And for the first time, I demoed the War Machine.
Ah, one of my favorites.
I like that. It was pretty fun.
Did you like it? It's nice skirmish-based
game. Think I'll prefer grid-based games better, though. Oh, it seems like there'd be less arguing.
Have you ever played D&D? Less arguing?
I've told
it's
you.
It's in a grid.
I've told... Well, that's usually a player's arguing with the GM, but...
But still, there's arguing. If there's a game and there's an advantage to be had and you think that you're being gypped that advantage, there's going to be arguments.
But the less rigid the rules are... And you can't get less rigid than... Move wherever hell you want, as long as you go. And like I heard stuff like there's like a half inch worth of slop in the game. Like, you know, if you're within, like, if you get to move 3 inches, but you're at the end of your turn a half inch away from the base, you can go ahead and close the melee and War Machine. That's what the guy told me.
Yeah, your weapon has a half inch reach.
Oh, is that what it is? Yeah. Okay, we didn't explain it very well. But I just think, like, not having any kind of official playing surface to govern how you move would be rife. For, and then that, and we talked about this. Well, my game group might just be a bunch of assholes.
Well, here's what I think. When you first start playing a game, and something like War Machine or D&D or whatever, you need to set out expectations.
Right.
Like, especially on a miniature war game, you have a board. This is the terrain. You have to say, this is the difficult terrain. This is where you're going to... This is going to impose this. And I think everything else falls into place, as long as everybody has the same expectations.
Aren't you a proponent of the game group charter?
Yes, I am a proponent of the charter.
I think I read that on your site.
The campaign charter.
Where basically you roll out a governing document that says, here's how we arbitrate differences, here's who has the final say.
Here's the house rules.
Here's the house rules, here's how long you get to argue before you need to fucking move on.
Yes.
But like I said, my group is a little
bit... Yeah, and I make everybody fucking sign that son of a bitch.
Right.
You read it, you sign it, and then... Because it's... Yeah.
Does that actually work? If someone starts violating, you just kind of wave it and say, you know...
Well, I tell them to fucking leave. If they can't abide by the fucking charter that they signed, then they're no longer welcome to play.
All right. So, I mean, I think that's the other thing is my group is... We've known each other since we literally, in some cases, were 12 years old. And, you know...
There's one guy I game with that I've been friends with that long.
And it's tough to, like, tell those people to, like, just take a fucking walk, even
I think it's easier
assholes.
To take those, tell those guys fucking... hey, asshole. Yeah.
So, did you see any cool costumes this weekend? I saw a really cool Spartan, a female Spartan at that, during the costume show.
I didn't see anything that blew my mind.
That was the female Spartan was pretty cool. Yeah, but I'm the same way. I didn't see...
Of course, I did see a trio of Warhammer cosplayers, which inspired me to maybe do some Warhammer stuff.
Yeah, talk about that a little bit. Because, I was going to cosplay this year with my girlfriend at the time. She was going to go as April O'Neil, and I was going to go as Casey Jones from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
But then she dumped your ass.
She dumped my ass a month before the game, and, like, that was, like, very sad. So, like, I was like, well, fuck that. I still want to cosplay. I just... I didn't have any idea what to do in the short notice.
See, I have this superiority complex where I think I can do everything better. I saw these guys. Now, I guess one was a Battle Sister. So none of them was a Space Marine. So you had like
was the Battle Sister hot?
No.
Oh, okay.
I've seen hot Battle Sister. I mean, she's not.
She wasn't.
I'm married, so I.
She wasn't a beast, right?
No, she wasn't a beast.
Okay.
Yeah. She's a. Geek 5, maybe.
Okay.
So...
right, so okay. She's an LA 2. Yeah, yeah. A Vegas 1. All right.
So, but that... Like, I've always thought about cosplaying, but I'm like, I have to have... To do it, I need to have, like, movie set or nearly movie set quality.
Work. Right. You're going to go big or not at all.
That's right. You fucking go big or go home. Mm-hmm. So you don't dress up in your mommy's fucking pajamas type bullshit.
Or wear a raccoon tail coming out of your belt loop.
Yeah.
And put ears on and call that cosplaying.
Yeah. Well, that's like some Renaissance fair.
Nah, that's
bullshit.
Like furry bullshit is what that is.
The tails I always see at Renaissance fair.
Really?
Yeah. It started there.
Really?
I don't know why. There's no historical precedent.
I thought it was all furry, like Japanese cat girl crap.
No, the ears maybe. Hmm. Okay. But so as my litmus test to see if I really want to go big or go home, I am creating a Godwin pattern Mark II Bolter from Warhammer 40K.
It's a big fucking gun.
It's a one-handed... It's not the pistol. They have a pistol version, but this is like a one-handed...
What's a bolter?
A bolter fires a... It depends on what source you look at, but either a 75 caliber or a 998 caliber round.
Really?
They call it a bolter, but it's like incendiary thing. They have different types of rounds for it.
Right.
So yeah, it's like basically a... small cannon round. So, yeah, I'm making a Godwin pattern bolter. And I've already got I printed out, cut out, and assembled a template that I'm going to use on insulation foam.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're going to go from there. So,
cool.
We'll see.
So, when are you going to try to debut this?
I want to have something workable by Halloween.
Really?
Which is not very far away.
Cool.
So, but a complete costume by next Gen Con.
Hmm.
So, right. So if I get through the bolter,
right.
I was like, yeah, I can do this, boost my confidence, my ego, then we'll go the whole nine yards. I've already got it worked out in my head how I want to do everything.
Right.
I've also given thought to doing a Big Daddy from, not from Kick-Ass, but the Big Daddy from BioShock, the guy with the drill, the underwater drill guy.
Right.
And have my daughter dress up as a little sister.
Would she be on board with that?
I think so.
Yeah.
She can be pretty devious and gruesome when she wants to be.
Right.
She's
right.
only five. She'd be six by next drink on.
Cool. Yeah, so, she's right in the age range.
Right. So she'd be the perfect height. And I think I'd get her to act fucking weird.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, creepy. Harvest some shit. You know,
right.
go out there
chase
and harvest.
People with
yes.
giant hypodermic needles.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I think she'd be all in for that. Yeah.
Cool.
So, or at least she once she got comfortable with her surroundings.
See, I was talking about, like, I would love to dress up as a kind of anthropomorphic Appa from the Last Airbender, like a big shaggy white costume
right.
with this extra pair of legs, and have my boy go as Aang.
Yeah.
And a basic Buddhist monk.
Would you shave his head and do the blue tattoo?
I would totally shave his head and do the
awesome.
Blue tattoo.
What do you think his mom would say?
His mom would go into avatar mode. Her eyes would glow red. And
would she dump a big-ass wave on you and
yeah,
do the end of it?
Something like that. She might go firebending. But, yeah,
it'd
that's
be
part
like
of the
Ozen's
fun.
Comet.
That's part of the cosplay, right? So.
Oh.
Anyway. Any of the other Gen Con highlights? We're running out of time.
Yeah, let me wrap up real quick.
Okay.
I just want to say Margaret Weiss Publishing, or Productions, got the Marvel Comics license. So you'll be seeing a Marvel Comics RPG from them.
Really?
From her.
It's been a while. It's been a minute
it
since
has
I've had a Marvel.
Been, yeah, what? Marvel Superheroes Saga or something from TSR way back in the day.
Whoa, it has been a minute.
So, at least that's the last one I know of. And, of course, we all know Green Ronin has the DC Comics,
mm-hmm,
which has been
right.
out for a year.
Yep, came out last Gen Con.
What else are we going on? Ticket sales are actually up 26% from last year. 250,000 event tickets.
Jesus. At $2 a piece?
At $2 a piece.
Wow.
So.
You know, I'm actually surprised it didn't make more than that. Because to me, when I look around and see how much everything is making, the Gen Con seems like it is like printing money. Like I think I add up all the money they're getting from the booths and all the money they're getting
they
from.
They did go through a bankruptcy not too long ago.
Yeah, but god damn, how can you go bankrupt running a con?
I think it's because they overextended themselves because they had Gen Con Southern California, Gen
yeah.
Con UK, Gen Con whatever the fuck they were doing it.
Right.
They overextended themselves, and then they had the fiasco with Lucasfilms and donations, charity bullshit.
Weren't they running the Star? Weren't they also running the Star
Celebration?
Wars celebrations? I thought that was the case, too.
Maybe.
Because that's how they got in trouble with Lucas, wasn't it?
Yeah, they had some kind of charity. It was supposed to go to charity, and they ended up not.
Right.
Forking over all the charity.
Yeah,
some kind of shady bullshit.
Yeah, the feds get on you for that, too. to say something's for charity. And
yeah, so we'll have to maybe talk. Maybe we should talk to the people behind Gen Con. So, yeah, there's that. Let me think. There's a new Lord of the Rings RPG coming out called The One Ring, and that's going to be distributed by Cubicle 7.
Oh, Fantasy Flight has a Lord of the Rings card game, too, which, as far as I could tell, plays a lot like their
other
Game of Thrones
games.
Ones, and
yeah.
the art looked indistinguishable, too. I don't know. I went a little bit medieval overload.
It's easy to do at Gen Con, I suppose.
Yeah.
Other than that,
one
I,
gray wizard starting to look like the others.
I guess I have a shout out for a friend of mine who produced a web series called Gold,
mm-hmm.
the series, which has to do... It's a parody on, like, these players of a D&D-style tournament. So they're in a tournament, and so it's a big parody. It's in its first season. They're trying to collect money for their second season.
Right.
So I bought the DVD in a nice pint glass from their booth this year. So I'd like to give a shout-out to David and Gold the Series.
Cool.
Other than that, I think that's about it.
All right. So next year, if you live in Indianapolis or really within a comfortable drive, you can't go wrong, especially if you pre-register, you get your ticket for like $65. It's 4.5 days of gaming downtown Indianapolis. It's just wall to wall geeks. Everybody's friendly. I mean, I started, I played in a lot of mixed groups this year because I didn't have a lot of friends there. I'm basically three friends there. So, and it was, it really went well. It's larger. Everything was cooler. Like, I've noticed some, like, humid, damp areas in Gen Con's previous. And
yeah, I wish this week's weather was last week, though.
A lot less, yeah, no kidding. A lot less geek funk, too. I don't know, that's because the facility's bigger and they got better circulation now. Also, some awesome stuff. Like, I went to the Rio Grande booth, and their actually room where they're playing, and they, like, brought in a fully catered buffet.
That's sweet.
No question. They said, no questions asked buffet. Like, you didn't have to be playing. It's just if you were in the room and it smelled good.
Really?
Yeah. My buddy Jim's girlfriend didn't even have a damn badge, which that's the one thing different because... Previous Gen Cons, they had a lot of stuff just going on in the general rooms, and no one really checked for badges. This year, anything that was cool at all, that was, like, not a conference, was being behind doors where a guy in a yellow shirt was checking badges.
Really?
Which I was kind of disappointed that she didn't get to see more of it. But, well, yeah, I mean... That,
buy a fucking badge!
That's true. Next year, I think she definitely will.
So,
but it was a good time. If you like what we're doing here at Blue Yonder, you want to give us feedback, some questions for Mad Brew, you can... email us at blueyonder@baldmove.com. You can follow us Twitter @baldmove, facebook.com/baldmove, and forums.baldmove.com. I personally have abandoned the forums to their fate.
I'm telling you.
Well, I just know
I've never been a fan of forums.
It's funny because we like went for months without a new registration, and even with the Breaking Good, which is our new podcast covering Breaking Bad, it's been pretty successful. We still weren't getting registration, so I'm like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm not going to do it no more. And the second
Didn't I
did,
say something when you guys started up the forums? I was like, they're bad.
I think they're good if you have a large enough community, but what I'm getting at is, like, I didn't, I like, turned my back on it, and it came back 3 weeks later, and we had, like, doubled the registrations because people were coming in, and I feel like the mad scientist that left, like, a Petri dish out the lab overnight, and it came back, and there's life here! Yeah. Spontaneous generation. But yeah, you go there, there's people that are posted and active, so hey, say hi. They probably won't bite your head off. It's completely unmoderated forum. So that's how you get a hold of us, and that's it for this week. Next week, I'm trying to get Jim back. If he's back from the land of the living, if not, I'll arrange another co-host. Maybe get our co-hosts at the Amazingly Pulp Show, J-Hat, to help out. And until that next time, I'm Aaron Hubbard, and
I'm Mad Brew.
Ciao, I guess.
Later.